good to go.
Sharon, Dawn, Jane, Trishna, Jude. I've got everyone. Doing well today. Lost Debbie now. I think she's gone to find out what they're planning this afternoon in this marquee. Whether we need to move rooms. Yeah. Okay, any questions so far? Anything you want to share? Anything you've seen for yourself through new eyes? Anything puzzling? All very straightforward. One of the hardest things is to hear this in a kind of new way, especially when it's sort of familiar to all of us. That's one of the hardest things.
Crosses with that. I mean, a lot of what I've learned from you has been emotional.
Yeah.
It crosses, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I was very close to this so many times.
Yeah.
And so many things are. There's a lot of things that have come close to this, but they've all developed into some kind of technique. And that's one of the big differences you'll see with this. It's not a technique. It's simply an understanding of how our apparatus of perception works. And the strange thing is that understanding how it works automatically changes what you do with it. I don't know anything else like that. Of all the things that I've studied, I don't know anything else that all you have to do is kind of hear it and everything else happens automatically. It's unique in my experience. And the really weird thing about it is that there's many people who heard it who didn't even want to. People who were just, you know, like it's been, for example, it's been taken into prison environments. One of the people that I've been studying with, Kathy Casey, she's taken into high security prisons in the US for many years. And so they run a program for the prisoners. The majority of whom would sign up for the talks that she was giving purely to get some, basically to get an hour out of being in the cell and or to get some credit with the parole board people, you know. And they had no positive incentive for going and learning this stuff. So they'd be sat in the room, you know, chewing gum, like, what's she on about, a load of nonsense, you know. There was no apparent interest in the subject whatsoever. But they'd keep showing up because that's how they got the credits. And then after a couple of months of this, they just completely transform, in spite of themselves. Isn't that weird? That something that you would think that you'd have to at least be motivated to learn it and to understand it, you don't. And I think the reason for that is because it's pointing to something which is completely natural to us. So what it's doing is it's kind of reminding us of how we're made, how we operate, and how we misuse that. We inadvertently, perfectly innocently, we misuse this apparatus that we've been given, and then we suffer the results, we suffer the consequences. So anybody who starts to see that just stops doing it. They basically, or at least they reduce the amount of noise in the system by a significant amount, with a corresponding improvement in the life experience.
What I've learned from this morning is that you can't necessarily tell somebody that it's your thoughts, they have to see it themselves.
Exactly. Well, you can tell them, but it probably won't help them.
No, it doesn't.
Especially if they're caught in something at that moment. What do I mean by that? If you see somebody who's caught in the machinations of their own thinking, and we all get caught. Basically, someone's in a mood, they're feeling upset, or they're feeling victimized, or whatever it is they're feeling. That's the least receptive mode for anybody to learn or hear this. And that's the time when it's most tempting to tell them it.
Mm.
you know. So it's great that you've already cottoned on to that, because, you know, when you see, if you've got a loved one and you see that they're really struggling with someone, it's very tempting to say, yeah, it's just your thinking, you know. You
don't have done that to yourself.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Don't add to the suffering. But they're very unlikely to be able to hear it in that moment, and just as you wouldn't either. So it's something that it's much better to, if you want to share it with someone else. We will talk about that as a topic, actually, how to share this and what helps and what doesn't help a bit later on as we go along. But you'll find it through your own experience anyway, is that it's much better to kind of slip it in when a person is receptive and maybe not even particularly keen to hear it. You know what I mean? When they're not. The other thing that happens often, if you go home and your partner says, okay, tell me exactly what did you learn, and like they really want to understand it, that's not conducive either. Because they're trying to get it at an intellectual level. It's the same thing that I said to you. That won't help you. If you think you've understood it at that level, it won't make any difference. It'll be an obstacle to your realizing it for yourself, which is what this is really about. So,
to sit here and absorb and daydream and just
just chill, just completely chill. You can have a nap. You can, you know, whatever you like. Just curl up. Let your mind drift somewhere else, because it is a peculiar thing in that it's more likely to be absorbed in a way that's helpful to you if you're not really putting your focus on it. So people often use the analogy of listening in the way that you would listen to music rather than listening to a lecture. Pretend that you're listening to music. You don't listen to music to try and understand it, you know, and if you do, it kills it. It kills the experience. It's much better. You just put it on and you relax and you enjoy it. You just let it be background. So just let this be background. Isn't that weird? It goes against the grain of... You what?
I can't cope.
You can't cope with background music?
No, really, it does my head in.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure? It's the background music that does your head.
I think maybe it's the kind of music that people play for background music. That might be it.
Oh, really? It's definitely something out there. See, this is a great example. When you talk about music, and the person would say, well, of course I'm upset by that music. It's horrible music. Anybody would be. Yeah, except for that teenager who loves it, you know, or your partner who loves it, or somebody else. Like, there's a whole raft of people who actually love that music. They're passionate about it, and you claim it's the music that does your head in. Well, if it was really the music that did our head in, it should do everybody's head in, shouldn't it? Really, if the music was causative for me being disturbed or distressed in some way, it would have to do that to everybody.
I was actually meaning that I can't treat it as background, that I have to listen.
Oh, really?
That's not what you're saying.
Okay. And what is it that compels you to listen?
I don't know. Just because that's what I do in my life. I do lots to do with music, so I listen. And to all music, not just to...
So that would be a new experience for you, just to have
just
it be background.
Just sit there and you know, that kind of stuff they play in yoga classes.
Or Muzak.
Elevator
music.
Pink music.
Maybe we should start playing some in there.
Some bubble gum music. Yes,
just to see what happens. Yeah. Did you get any news on the banging? No.
She wasn't there.
She wasn't there. She's hiding. Okay, I'll check it out. So... there's a few more things I want to talk about around thought, first of all. And one of the things is to start to realise that because we live in a world of thought, that fact makes it very difficult to see it. You know, it's a bit like the fish are not that aware of the fact that they're in water. Chances are. Because they're in it, you know, that's their world. When you live in that all the time, it's a bit like air in that sense. We're not that conscious of the air, except when it runs out, or it becomes, you know, it suddenly becomes noxious or toxic, then we notice it. But when air's just there and it's serving its function, we don't notice it. We just breathe it in, we breathe it out. We don't have to think to do that. So thought is a bit the same. We're living in a constant stream of thought. And the fact that it's our continuous experience makes us blind to it, makes us oblivious to it. This is another reason why thought, any attempts to control your thinking or manipulate your thinking are, probably futile, because the amount of thought that you can ever be aware of is minuscule relative to the amount of thought that's actually occurring. It's going to be the tiniest tip of a very big iceberg. So if you ever notice that you've just been thinking something, like the woman I told you about, she just caught a particular aspect of her thinking. That was probably 0.1% of the totality of her thinking, but it was a significant enough chunk that it gave her an insight. She saw something about it. But the chances are there was way more thought than that she didn't need to see in order to get the insight. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
She didn't need to examine the whole contents of the whole lot. She just needed to see a little bit about the nature of one part of it. That was enough. Some people don't even need to see that much. So what the workshop is about is understanding the nature of thought. It's not to do with changing the content of your thinking. You get the difference? It's about the nature of thought, the actual process that's happening in the background. It's not about looking at the individual contents of your thinking and trying to do anything with that. It's not about trying to replace negative thinking with positive, or trying to think differently in order that you'll feel differently. It's not about that. It's way better than that. We could do that, but it would take a lot longer and it would be a lot less effective. So this is a lot simpler, but it's not the direction we usually look in. Because usually where we look at the content, we look at the bubbles that are already out there, and we look at the results of our thinking. So that's where we do most, that's, I would say 99% of psychology and psychologically related techniques, what they're working with is the contents of your thought, the bubbles that have already been blown, essentially. And then all the behaviours which come out of those thoughts. Because if you just reflect on it for a moment, you'll see that all of your behaviours, whether you like them or you don't, whether they're, you consider them good or bad, whether they're habitual or not, whatever category you put them in, they're all driven by thought and feeling. All of our behaviours are driven by thought and feeling. So if you think about it this way, imagine there's a kind of a stream going that way. So behaviours, habits, and we could include in that things that people end up having treatment for, things like addictions, for example. And we can get addicted to anything, not just substances, but we can get addicted to certain ways of doing things, or like I can only listen to music a certain way. That's an addiction. You know, anything that you're compelled, you feel compelled to do something in a certain way and you can't do it another way, to me that's an addiction. And also how we relate to others, so the relationships that we have. All of these things are all being fueled, if we go a little further upstream, by feeling states, which in turn is being fueled by our thoughts. Okay. So the most popular forms of therapy at the moment, the ones that are available on the NHS and so on, cognitive behavioural therapy, you've probably heard the term. So what they're trying to do is get people to change their life experience on this level here. So you're actually looking at the behaviours that are working against you, that are not satisfactory, that are not helpful, not conducive, and trying to introduce new patterns of behaviour, new healthier habits and so on. That's not to say it's not helpful, it is. For some people it's helped them a great deal. However, it's going to be very limited to only a certain area of your life is going to change, and the person's got to be quite vigilant. There's a high degree of likelihood that the old habit will re-establish itself if they say, if I don't have enough willpower. It's kind of based on willpower and it's based on repetition. You've got to keep up the momentum. Otherwise, there's a big tendency to slip back. Why? Because what's fueling it hasn't changed. So if you're adopting a new behaviour with the same kind of thought pattern that you've been carrying for 10 years, the chances are that thought pattern pretty soon, it's going to re-establish itself either in a relapse or you're just going to start a different, you're going to drop that habit and replace it with this one. So I've stopped smoking now, but I'm eating like a horse, you know, it's that kind of thing. It just becomes a substitute, one thing for another. One of the things you can start to see from this also is that things like addictions, for example, they're very, very closely connected with feeling states. So typically, when someone's not feeling so good, and this is all of us, what we try and do is we look for something that will just take away that feeling, or that will give us a temporary feeling of relief, temporary feeling that we feel a bit better. And it seems pretty arbitrary what we turn to. You know, one person might just turn to yoga, and another one would turn to cocaine. And it's difficult to have any judgment about that when you start to see that, you know, it's kind of random, really, that, you know, one person goes jogging and they feel better. So as long as they keep jogging now, they say that, you know, I'm fine as long as I keep jogging. But the other person, it's no different really to someone say, well, as long as I have half a bottle of whiskey every night, I feel fine, you know. It's actually no different. The relationship between the behaviour and the feeling state is exactly the same. It just happens that one person has adopted a relatively okay habit in terms of their health, and another person has adopted a habit which is a bit more detrimental to their health. But the underlying structure is the same. Can you see that? It's not that different. And I would say that every single one of us has got something in that category. There's something that we do in order to relieve ourselves when we don't feel so good. Think of any examples?
I like reading. Reading, because I think the way that you've explained it, it's just because I've become more aware of my thoughts, and I know, so what I'm thinking, I'm going to have some thoughts, and it distracts me to a different way of thinking.
That's it.
Exactly. So,
it just takes your mind off it.
And that's why I have to read, and that's a habit, to switch off from everything else.
Exactly. Good example. Yeah.
Before I go to bed.
Yeah, so you find that just losing yourself in a book would have that effect. It takes your mind off whatever was troubling you. So consequently, your feeling state lifts.
Yes.
Someone else would switch on the TV and say the same thing. You know, it just enables me to forget all my worries of the day. I just zone out, and so I don't feel so bad.
You can still become addictive or compulsive or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting and reading the book all day, or even watching telly all day, or eating chocolate all day, or whatever.
This is why I'm not advocating this. I'm just reflecting back that this is what we typically do when we don't understand this connection. What we do is we associate feeling better with a particular doing. Now the problem with that is that we then believe that only that can relieve us, or something similar to it. So if it suddenly happened that reading was banned in your house, you know, for some reason, that would be a big problem, you know. And the same thing, if someone adopts a habit, like a smoking habit, because that's what relieves them, and people say, well, why do you smoke? Well, it's because I get stressed, and I have a cigarette and it calms me down. That's what they believe. Now, we know that it's not true. Physiologically, it's not actually possible for that to happen. But if a person believes that, it will have that temporary effect for them. But then they go to the doctor and they say, well, you've got to stop smoking, it's killing you. Now they're in a double bind, you know. It's the only thing that relieves me. And the person says, I can't do it. So the person's in a fix now. So as long as we think that it's something that we need to do or it's something outside of us, that's the only way we can feel better. We're caught in a trap. And I'd say that everybody, every one of us in this room has been caught in that trap. I would say most of us still are in some area of our life, at least. We might have gotten over it here, but there's still this area where we still believe it. So what else might we do to relieve feeling states? What have you done? What have you done in your past that you're willing to admit to? Get in a fight with somebody. Get in an argument. Yeah, that's one of the ways. You know, if you feel like it's all building up inside you, some people feel the only way, I need to get it off my chest. So who can I pick a fight with today? Oh, you'll do. Yeah, you're married to me, so you're handy.
Exactly.
So yeah, that can become habitual.
Blaming a person or a situation that is because.
Exactly.
Whatever it may be.
That must be the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that can be an habitual thing too.
Definitely. Yeah.
Or just walk away.
Just walk away. Exactly. I'm going to take myself out of this situation because it's this situation that's making me feel bad. That's the misunderstanding. It looks like that. And it's so compelling because when we do walk away, we feel better, right? Or at least to some degree, depending on how much we're still thinking about it. So if you walk away and you take all the thought with you, what happens? You feel just as bad. Yeah, it follows you. The bad feeling follows you like a bad smell.
And there's also that thing, if you try in a conversation with somebody that, you know, like a parent, or that it's a sort of habitual thing that happens with that person, those kind of conversations, if you say, okay, I'm not doing this, and say, oh yes, you're right, it doesn't make any difference to how I feel.
Yes.
I'm owning this.
Yes, yeah.
So it doesn't resolve anything for me. But I feel I have probably been so abusive or hurtful to that person, possibly.
Right.
If I can do that, but it doesn't do anything about the initial.
Of course not. How could it?
No.
Because the original source wasn't what it looked like. So any solution that's applied, where we've made a misunderstanding about what was the cause, any solution we apply is never going to be fully satisfactory. It's not possible. The other thing that I could add to this is just problems in life. Whatever problems and difficulties we have in life, they're part of the same thing. They appear as if they're things that are showing up and inflicting themselves on us. What we don't realise is that it's us that experiences it as a problem. And we experience it that way through the vehicle of thought and feeling. And we could be in exactly the same situation and have a different experience about it without it changing. And we've all done that, actually. We just haven't noticed. We've all done that many times. I guarantee you, you've had situations in your life when you've struggled with something, you've grappled with it, you've tried to get your head around it, you've tried to change it, and at some point you say, oh, sorry, I'm just going to give myself a break. Right? And in that moment, you've just taken off all the stress, you've let yourself just relax around it, and probably in that moment you've come up with a creative solution that you couldn't have even thought of before. But you certainly felt better without it changing, without the other person having changed, without the situation having changed, without the circumstances getting any better. You've suddenly oriented yourself in a different way towards it, without realising how powerful that is. Because we're led to believe that circumstances are what causes our feelings. We think that they have to change before we can feel better. Again, it's the same misunderstanding being played out. But think about it, this is being played out for everybody all the time, and it's been reinforced all the time by a lot of marketing messages also.
This for me was very interesting with the revolution
in Egypt,
because you see how different people are reacting to it.
Yes, good example.
And there's such a big difference between the activists who are down on the street, even when things are getting bad, and there's a very different sort of...
You'll find the whole spectrum.
It's amazing. It was very interesting.
And everybody will feel that they have to be acting and feeling and behaving the way they do because of the revolution.
Yeah.
Right? It's because of that. Well, of course I'm stressed. Of course I'm whatever they are. They would say, well, of course. And they would attribute it to that cause. And yet someone else is in the same situation having a totally different experience of it.
Absolutely, exactly.
And somehow we don't make that connection. We don't see that. It can't possibly be that, otherwise it should be affecting me the same way as it's affecting you. And it isn't. So I want to just examine this connection with you a bit more. Because this, to me, was one of the most revealing aspects of this understanding, and still is. Because I told you, I've worked in the realm of belief change, and I worked in the realm of emotional release work for quite a number of years. And I hadn't seen how simple this was. I couldn't believe it. How could anyone have missed that? To me, it's amazing that we've all missed this so consistently for so long. But if I was to ask you, just in general, where do your feelings come from? What causes you to feel the way you feel?
The mind.
Well, if you didn't know what we talked about here today, what would you say? Would you have said that yesterday?
I feel in my guts.
Okay.
Feeling.
experiences. Okay, let me ask it a different way. I'm not asking where do you feel it. What I'm asking you is what causes you?
Generates.
Yeah, what generates it? What causes you to feel it? Would you still say your mind?
Say the outer world. Yeah, your experiences and what's going on around you.
What's going on around them? Okay. So we would say things like, it's my circumstances.
Yeah?
What else? Specifically, what would we say?
Past experience.
Okay, past experiences, definitely. Yeah. What else?
Physical well-being.
Yeah, okay, my physical health.
Yeah.
Yeah, if my body's playing up, then of course I don't feel so good.
Outlook.
Say it, sorry?
Your outlook.
Outlook.
Yeah.
Okay. Meaning?
Expecting to see things. You know,
okay. So let's put that in a different category. Because it is different, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Because it's influenced by your circumstances and your past experiences, so it's another, maybe it's another stage on or back or depending on up or down. I don't know.
Okay.
It hasn't happened, it's a future event. You're just looking at a future on circumstances.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, okay. Well, what I heard, when she said outlook, what I heard was that.
Yeah.
Right? Which is what's been internally generated. It's your internally generated response, rather than anything around you or outside of you that's happening to you. Yeah? So that's not in the same category as these other things. And it's interesting to me that occasionally we'll see that. Occasionally we'll make the connection. We'll see that the way that we're feeling is directly connected to the way that we're thinking. So, who's ever caught themselves getting themselves into a mood? Who's it? You ever done that? Where you know full well that you're really kind of going after it and you're really adding some juice to it. And there's no good reason to, but you can't stop yourself, right? So occasionally we know that we've done that. That through our own outlook, through our own thinking process, we've generated extra feelings that we don't particularly like. And maybe you've done it the other way too, that you've had a shift in that outlook, you've seen something a bit more positively, we call it, you've had a change of heart about someone or something, and you feel better, suddenly you feel different. But I would say for most of us that's in the category of occasional, and it's kind of random, you know, it's now you see it, now you don't, you know, you get a glimpse of that, and then the rest of the time, oh no, it's circumstances, no, it's because of what my body's doing, no, it's because of what happened in my past. So we forget that very readily, because the external evidence is so compelling.
I think that's where, do you know that sentence I mentioned at the beginning?
No,
about
I've forgotten already.
About the how would we know what night is if it wasn't for the darkness?
Yes.
And because I read it, why I find reading so interesting is because it gives me a different perspective.
Yes.
And that changes my thinking.
That's it. That's a changing outlook right there.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that is. Yeah. But the thing is, see, even the way that you language that, you said, that gives me a different perspective.
Yeah. I was thinking.
Which makes it look like it was something out there that did it to you. And actually it didn't. That perspective came to you from inside of you.
But does understanding automatically mean that you change how you do things, or how?
Well, depending on the depth to which you understand something.
Because that is an understanding, but is it, you know, what level is it at?
Yeah, well, I draw the distinction between the regular understanding, which, when we use that term, it can be misleading because what I think normally we equate that with is what I would call an intellectual understanding.
The words mean
where we figured something out. You know, to our own satisfaction. We kind of mulled over it a bit and we've come to a conclusion about it. Okay, now I've got that down. And we use that term in that context to say, yeah, I understand that. I didn't understand it before. But that's not necessarily what we're talking about here. And it doesn't really have that impact, as you well know. So there's a difference between that and what we talked about earlier, realization. Or the other word that's used is insight. So we're going to talk about that.
Part of the spiral, you know, we go deeper or wherever, whichever way you want to
Yeah, yeah, and of course they're not mutually exclusive. You know, these are two different modes of thought that we can use almost simultaneously, or we can alternate, or we can just flip out one and into the other at any given moment. So you can be trying to figure something out for days and not getting anywhere. And then you give yourself a 2-minute break, and suddenly you have a realization about it. But how do you know the difference?
That feels within inside you, not
right.
Inside you.
And you're pointing like this. So
it's me, it's in the heart.
Yeah, you feel it. It has a feeling difference. It has a feeling tone which is completely different. It's of a different order of feeling. And everybody, even though people will use different words to describe it, everybody will essentially describe it with a commonality of theme. They'll say it was like a ha-ha, or some people say it was like a relief, like the lady I talked about before the break. Her body just relaxed and she felt relieved. Some people will just say, I just knew that that was true. It's like a knowing. And even if you say, well, how did you know? I don't know how I know, but I knew.
You know, because like, you can't think about anything else at the moment of realisation.
Yeah.
It's a gut feeling. It's almost like an instinctual animal feeling.
Something in you just
correct.
Goes, yes, it's correct. It's got a rightness to it.
And all that comes in after all that. Oh yeah, but whatever, and don't you remember, which can cut it out in a second. It's almost just like holding on to that gut feeling. Because
yeah.
It's not a horrible feeling, it's quite a...
No, on the contrary,
feeling.
It's pleasant, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Whatever else I do today, that's true.
That's
true
it.
Thing.
Well, it's part of a sort of flow.
I think
there's a sort of... You can see... beyond it, it's not being stuck in a moment.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that what Sid Banks talked about when he talked about mind has been like the higher intelligence, or the universal intelligence behind all life. What he called, when he talked about things like, well, we would use the term, say, wisdom. You know, when you're connected with your wisdom, he said that's all that is. He said that's just your connection to the universal intelligence when it's not contaminated by personal thought. So in other words, what we call wisdom or insight, it's not personal. We're just tapping into that bigger field of intelligence that's running the whole shop. It's the same intelligence that's making our cells replicate, that's making nature happen. It's available to us, we're part of it. And every now and again we tap into it, we go, wow, what a brilliant insight I had. Well, it wasn't yours. It's just, you've glimpsed that intelligence. You've just connected with it momentarily. Because your own thinking was out of the way for a moment. That's all.
Can I just tell you about something? It was a bit of a moment like that. I sent you an email and I had this sort of strange morning when I woke up and I went on the computer, as I always do. But there was a photograph of my daughter, she'd sent me.
That's a good sign.
It was lovely. She's in South America, and it was a photograph of her. She got her hooked on. She was in Machu Picchu. I don't know if it was the energy. God, can I do that? I'm coming through. Anyway, so I saw her photograph, and there she is. And what I wrote, I didn't think about. Just me. So I wrote back, and I said, "This makes me so happy, I could burst." And I thought, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
I just typed it. But that feeling carried on. So after I'd done that, I went for a walk with the dog. And I felt like I'd taken a massive dose of carcinosin. Because I felt so connected to what the real sort of essence.
That's it, yeah.
And it was all good. And then something else weird happened. I won't comment back, but I thought that's very bizarre. And it didn't last, but I can feel it coming back now.
Right.
And it was just, my daughter wrote back to me and she said, that was so beautiful what you wrote to me, it made me cry. So it was just a moment of being totally, no thoughts.
Yes.
Just.
That's it, and that's what comes through.
Yes.
Yeah, when our personal thinking is out of the
way.
Well, probably.
Because I do think about that remedy quite a lot, because I often think, if only the whole world could have it.
There we go.
But I know, but don't you think it
No. No. I tried giving it to the whole world when I was a homeopath.
Yeah.
I had at least half my practice was taking that remedy at one point. Didn't work out. It's a nice thought, but it's the peculiar thing about this is that it has to be individually realised, moment by moment. In that sense, it can't be imposed from the outside by mass medication or any other means. Despite the positive intent, it just cannot.
I'm actually now wondering, like, on what level of energy healing or any type of healing would work, would it, because supposedly, like, for example, the sensation method, I mean, that goes to emotions, right? And they claim that it's the core.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a claim, if it's true, I don't know. Just,
I don't
but,
know.
But, I mean, what effect can it have if it's not an inner realization? Because then recreate.
That's exactly right.
The experience again.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, those of you who don't know about homeopathy, one of the directions that homeopathy has gone in recent years is that it's been recognised to a much higher degree that the state of mind of the practitioner is at least as, if not more important than whatever remedy they might be coming up with.
Mm.
And that is part of what you'll start to understand from this that we're talking about here is that it's not the words that I use to convey it that influence whether you get it or not, so much as my state of being and your state of listening, your state of receptivity. So I think there is a correspondence there between what some of the homeopaths in this field are, what they're discovering is, if they get themselves in the right state and they spend a little time hanging out in that with another person, it's contagious.
It's probably more than the remedy itself.
And they say so, yeah. Which is why they often end up, they don't even give the remedy.
Yeah.
Because it just happens. Something happens. The person who's with them gets a realization, they see something. That's the healing. That's really what healing is, when a person sees something they haven't seen before. Everything else falls away. At which point, the giving of the remedy just becomes a kind of ritual act. It's not necessarily the thing that does the healing anymore.
What about with babies? Because when I'm with my... Is it more likely the parent state that's appearing, not so much?
When you say appearing, do you mean?
I mean, when my daughters were born with incredible constipation, they would not, and then they would cry 1 month screaming, remedies, right, whatever, right, all kinds of different, I mean, what have you, you know, and. And like, how would, I mean, at that age, 2 months old, I'm not sure what kind, you know, there's probably very little thought, so it have to be my thoughts or my husband's, or, I mean, I'm trying to put it within that context in a way. And
yeah. Well, certainly you would have some thought about that.
Mm.
You know, you couldn't not, and your husband would too. But also they would pick up on that. To a large extent, so in that sense, you know, the symbiotic relationship, particularly with the mother, is such at that age that they will be picking up and reflecting back a lot of your own thinking.
Mm.
And I think animals do that for us too. So you've seen that with the horses, haven't you? Debbie works with horses in a healing context, and they seem to be very, very sensitively attuned to the thoughts of the people around, and will somehow reflect that back to you in a variety of creative ways. Whether you see it that way or you don't, you know, that seems to be just what they do.
Yeah.
But having said that, I still hold the view that we develop illness, for example, for a whole variety of reasons. I don't think it's all just coming from our thinking.
Mm.
You know, like the body does stuff for various reasons. Sometimes we put foods in our body that are not suitable, you know, unknowingly. We do all kinds of things like that, and we suffer the consequences. However, once a person's body is doing something, our response to it is determined by our thinking. And a lot of this was mentioned here. When I said, what do you think is causing your feelings? Somebody said, well, physical health has to do with that. A lot of people make that connection in their mind. Well, if my body was only X, Y, and Z, then I could relax and I'd be happy. And actually, that's not true. I could show you people that have got maybe 6 weeks to live and their body's riddled with cancer, and they're perfectly happy. They're completely at peace. In fact, it's the first time in their life when they have been. So this is also a false equation that many of us have made. We falsely believe that we have to be in a certain state of physical health in order for it to be at peace and to have experience well-being. We don't. You can
the message society sends out, isn't it?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. It's been reinforced from every angle all the time. And it's not true. And you don't have to look far to see that it's not true. You will find people in your own circle who've undergone, you know, all kinds of things, and they've been in pain or in suffering of various kinds, and have been completely okay with it. Which shouldn't be possible according to that model, and yet it is. So well-being comes from within us, and it's independent of anything that our body's doing, anything that anybody else is doing.
But would it not reflect itself on you physically? I mean,
yeah,
is that connection
it does.
Too? So
it does. And we know that too now from the neurophysiology research that's been really done, you know, done a lot in the last couple of decades. We know that, for example, if I hold feelings of grief in my body for a prolonged period, it's detrimental to my health. There is a knock-on effect for the body. Same with anger, frustration, same with fear. Yeah. So it seems that we weren't designed to run that kind of fuel. We can do, but we're not designed to do so. It's not the best medicine for us. Which is kind of neat, really. I mean, that's what a lot of this research has uncovered, is that the highest octane fuel for our body is love and joy and happiness and well-being. Because when we're in that state of feeling, the hormones and everything that goes into our body is all the good stuff. It's the things that actually enliven us, and they promote cell regeneration, they increase our immunity. All of that happens automatically when we're in a state of well-being, and we're feeling at peace with ourselves. It's kind of a neat system when you think about it, is that we're designed to be feeling good the vast majority of the time. We're not designed to be feeling anxious, uptight, stressed, angry, frustrated, or sad. Those are supposed to be momentary passing things, it seems.
Yeah, but there's when you have some physical therapies, you get emotional release.
Absolutely. Yes.
So thoughts, is it thoughts or is it feelings that are getting stored?
Well, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
And this has been a big puzzle to me, because that's what my work's been based on for years. And a lot of, let's say, psycho-emotional techniques are based on the assumption that we can store feelings in the body. And I believed that for a long time. Journey work, for example, is in that category, where you talk about cellular memories. And the idea is that we have these feelings which are stored away from earlier traumas. And if you make that conclusion, then the obvious thing to do in therapy is to reactivate the feeling. And then you have to reactivate it in order that it can be released. Makes sense. And it even works. But the fact that it works doesn't mean it's true.
No,
that's the peculiar thing.
I've had a treatment done, and I don't know what happened, but it was like a couldn't stop crying.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that many times. No.
But it was like uncontrollable, it came like
going. Yeah, I've seen that hundreds and hundreds of times. And there's different ways that I can understand that now. One of the things that I've noticed is that we have a lot of judgment about certain feelings. All of us. We're all conditioned to believe that some feelings are good and some feelings are not so good. The ones that we think are not so good, we try not to feel them. Put a lot of energy into not feeling those ones. Now, what is judgment? It's just thought. So if I have the continuous thought, and I've been thinking it for so long that I don't even know that I'm thinking it, that let's suppose I grew up believing that big boys don't cry, men don't cry. Okay? So whatever happens to me, I'm not going to cry. Or if I do cry, no one's going to see, and it's not going to last long. Because it's got this meaning for me. It means that I'm weak, or I'm this, or I'm that. So I can't let that happen. Now, if I'm with somebody in a healing context and they show me through their presence, they show me that it's okay to feel. maybe they just let me know somehow that that's okay. What's essentially what's happening is that they're replacing judgmental thoughts with thoughts of acceptance. The person is just bringing an acceptance, a loving okayness to something that I've been judging myself harshly. And that's what I realized, that's what I was doing in emotional release work. All I was doing is I was bringing the possibility of okayness to something that the person had a lot of judgment about. And the moment they entered into that, they would start to release that feeling. They just feel it in a way that they haven't allowed themselves to feel before. And they say, God, it feels great. Well, of course it feels great. It's a bit like if you've had a dam that's been holding up a lot of water, you know, and you keep putting sacks of sand there to keep it back, and it gets bigger, and you put a bit more, and it gets bigger. There's a lot of effort going into that. And the moment you take all that away, and you just let the water flow again, it feels great. It doesn't matter what the emotion is. You know, it feels wonderful for a while. It's like, oh, God, it feels good just to let myself cry. And it does. And it's the same for a person who's never let themselves be angry. If they just let rip for the first time in their life, it feels brilliant. They feel like, you know, they feel invincible for a little while. But the mistake is to think that the healing was to do with a stored feeling. It's not so much that the feeling was stored in the body, it's that the person had a taboo in their thinking about that feeling. In their thinking, that was not allowed to feel that. And the moment they go, huh, it's okay, they just let themselves feel it. And it plays itself out very quickly. So they just feel it for a while, they cry for a while, and then they stop and they feel much better. It's fine. What that opens up, though, is the possibility they could just feel it in the future. You don't have to avoid it. So there could be some long-term healing from that as well. I saw that, does anybody know the therapy EFT? Emotional Freedom Technique. So I used that for years. It's the same business. So they use these tapping on points to release their emotions. But what I learned from that was that the most powerful part of it is the beginning part, where there's a little phrase that you say. Anybody remember the phrase? Even though I have this problem, whatever it is, what's the next bit? I deeply and completely accept myself. So what you're doing is you're changing your thoughts about what you're feeling. And I saw that that's really, to me, that's the most powerful part of EFT, is it just takes away the judgment that you had about something that you were resisting, something that you were trying not to feel. Anything that does that will give you a good feeling. Anything that takes away the judgment. But again, we're in the realm of playing with the bubbles here. Can you see that? And what I learned, I mean, I did EFT for about 5 years, and I realized I could do it for another 35 years, and it's endless. The amount of bubbles that I could find to work on are endless. There's always going to be feelings that you don't want to feel. There's always going to be thoughts that you'd rather you weren't having. So there's a built-in limitation to those techniques. Because the bubble machine's always on, right? It doesn't get switched off just by the fact that you've managed to burst a few with your newfound technique. It's generating just as many new ones behind the scenes all the time. And they might be just as bad as the ones you've just popped. They often are. That's the problem.
Is it? It's like it has some, that space has to be filled with something, so it's very easy
exactly.
to just put
exactly.
you know,
it's
more of the same. Or
it is.
Something
it's very
different,
tempting.
But really the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Different clothes.
Yeah, that groove has been so well worn that the likelihood to think similarly is very high. And again, we know that from brain science, is that we actually lay down pathways in the brain. If we think something repetitively, we actually create neural pathways, which makes it more likely for us to think that way again. It doesn't mean it's the only way we can think, it just makes it more likely. Matrix energetics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is all about the quantum field.
Yes.
And that's exactly what, it's sort of the penny's dropped a little bit, because they're saying that the quantum field is full of just light and information.
Yes.
And as such, it's full of infinite possibilities.
Yes.
And that's basically, you know, I was sort of been doing sort of this matrix course, I've been doing, practicing that for about a year, and I came to the same conclusion I've come to with everything else, that actually this could just go on forever.
Yeah.
But that's because, isn't it? Because our thoughts are going to create another possibility,
exactly.
which is going to be along the same line
that's it.
As the one before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And that's the bit that the technique doesn't address.
Yeah.
And that's what I saw. And it's not to say the technique isn't valid or isn't useful.
Yeah.
It is. It can really help, and it can
yeah.
you know, it can transform someone's experience in that moment. but it won't prevent them necessarily from regenerating some new problem.
We're always reaching the same limitation in whatever it is.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I saw with this. That's what I saw was uniquely different about this, is that it's not solution-focused in terms of dealing with the problems you've already created. It's showing you the mechanism by which you create them. And when you start to really see that, that changes. And it's the only thing I know that's working on that level, exclusively on that level. So this doesn't have anything to say with bubble popping. It's got... if you catch me getting into that, you can tell me, Ian, that's not what this is about. Because it's tempting to do so, but it's not what this is about. This is about seeing the origin and also seeing the nature of what these are. And the nature of thought is that it's transient. It's energy taking form and then going back to energy. Taking form, back to energy. Taking form, back to energy. That's all it is. If we let it be just that, that's all it is. And what do? It takes form and we go, ooh, interesting form. What shall I do with that? Let's add a bit more to it. Ooh, I don't like that. Let's try and get rid of it. Ooh, it's horrible. It's really hurting. Let's try and get rid of it. Ooh, let's have some therapy on it. Let's go back into the past and see where it came from. That's what we do. And it's all innocent. Like, it's a good intention. You know, it seems like a good idea. But we don't realise all we're doing is adding more to it. It's more of the same, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. And wondering why it hasn't gone away. But if we could see that the nature of it is just to come and to go, come and go, that's always been the nature of thought, and that hasn't changed. And that's the same for everybody. Its nature is to come and go by itself. Every thought is capable of just going by itself, if we don't add anything to it. Doesn't matter how rotten the thought was. Mm. It's got no power over you if you don't add anything to it.
Coming on this call, actually, because I read the email... on Tuesday, and I thought, yes, that resonates really well. And then I spent the next 2 days trying to work out how I could get out of the commitments that I'd made for this weekend.
Yeah, well done for doing so.
And then by the end of Wednesday, when I just couldn't get it to work, I just went, well, if I'm meant to be on the course, something will happen.
You gave up, yeah.
And by Thursday, it had all sorted itself out.
Good example.
So,
yeah. That's
so
it. Well done. It's a great example, because that's the difference again between personal thought and the bigger intelligence. And the only thing that blocks our access to bigger intelligence is when our own thinking is in the way. It's the only thing that can. Nothing else can stop it.
It sort of comes back to that intellectual understanding and the realization.
Yes.
I've got the intellectual understanding.
Okay.
But in practicality...
How do I do that? It's so tempting, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's when I experience it, and then you're when it happens, then the realization is, so it is.
Yeah, that's it. That's when the mud hits the ground.
Yeah, because I've read that in so many different places.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't add anything to the book.
Exactly. We all know this is a good idea, just as we all know that just be in the present, you know, and all your problems will disappear and so. It's a great theory, but as long as it remains at the level of a good idea, it has no impact on our life.
Yeah, because it's at the intellectual level.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, many of us have read The Power of Now, and, you know, we know about this stuff intellectually, but it hasn't impacted to the level of the person who wrote it, because we haven't seen it for ourselves in the way that he saw it. Now what this offers, and again, this is, to my knowledge, this is relatively unique, this offers a fairly accessible way that anybody can see it for themselves. All you have to do is hang out in it for a little while, and sooner or later it'll start to dawn on you. I can't tell you exactly when, because that's the mystery. It's individual for each person. But I'm pretty confident that you'll cotton onto it at some point. So I arbitrarily make it a 9-month course. I mean, it could have been 1 month, it could have been 6 years, because I don't know. Feel free to completely get it this morning, you know what I mean? In which case, you can just relax and deepen in it over the rest of the time. But for someone else, you might grapple with it for 8 months, and then on the 9th month, you give up and you go, oh, yeah, now I see it. I can't control that bit. It's not anything I can influence particularly. But I have noticed that for the majority of people, a duration of time is helpful. It's helpful to hang out in it for a while and to be reminded. And I think just one of the reasons for that is because the rest of the world is telling you it's the other way around. And will continue to do so. So almost every other message you're going to get outside this room is going to be telling you it's outside in. It's the outside that's causing you to feel what you're feeling. Therefore, you need to change things in the outside in order to feel better. You're going to keep getting that message every day of your life. So that's why it's practically useful to get this message more than once, because it takes a while for it to establish itself as something that we can accept. It's going against the grain of a lot of conditioning and a lot of marketing, as I said already. Book now to avoid disappointment. Think about it. What's it saying? It's saying disappointment comes from not doing something that you'd wished you'd done. Well, it doesn't. It comes from thought. It's like all other feelings. So if you miss the seminar that you thought you really wanted to do, I mean, you could be disappointed, couldn't you? Especially if you heard how great it was subsequently. Oh God, you know, I really should have done that. I knew it. But that's just one conclusion you could draw. You could equally say, well, obviously it wasn't meant for me. In which case there'd be no disappointment. Or you could say, well, thank God I didn't tie my weekends up with that, because look at what else I'm doing now. So it's the opposite of disappointment. You're happy that you missed it. There's nothing that says you have to feel disappointed, except your own thinking. And there's something that we're going to look at as we go along, is that we all have a lot of learning that says there's certain ways that we have to feel in response to certain things. Some of them are social expectations. Some of them is our own individual interpretations of life. Some of them are family patterns. And many of them are just a blending of all of those. But we've all learned that there's certain ways that we're compelled to feel when certain things happen. And they're all made up, as far as I can tell. They're all made up. Which means they're all optional. You know, once you see that the arbitrary nature of it, they become optional. And it frees you to feel some other way if you'd like to. What do you think about that banging, by the way?
Fucking annoying,
yeah. That banging is causing you to feel annoyed.
No, I'm only telling you why, because next door, all bloody week, it's training the centre for the street drinkers and the drugs. And they're building perfect. A new fucking hostel that can be drill, hammer, whatever.
So it's got a familiar ring to it for you, Corinne.
Okay. I thought I'd come to meet at the park to have a nice quiet
peaceful.
Listen.
It's going to be peaceful here. Yeah. who had a different response to it?
A slightly different response.
What would be your response?
It's great to have the windows open because it's warm and the sun's shining.
Okay.
they're doing their thing and I'm doing my thing.
Okay.
I do have a slight problem.
Caroline?
I remember when my dad passed away just in the last moments. This enormous banging going all around the place, and there were loads of family members getting really stressed about it because, you know, it's a very deep moment, and the hospital was just full of noise. And I remember back then thinking, this isn't bothering him. Mm. You know, this isn't the level that he's at right now. It didn't bother me. I just got the same.
It reminded you of that.
Yeah.
Sarah, what was it?
I mean, it's there, but I didn't really notice it until you.
Isn't that interesting?
Think of the noise. Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
I was brought up in Cairo, though. You realise this is
exactly.
It's music.
Exactly. But I want you to see the ramifications of this. If it's not in our thinking, it doesn't exist for us.
Yeah, that's interesting because I wasn't really that aware of it. Right. I was absorbed in what you were saying.
Right. Exactly.
It's only when people pointing it out that
exactly.
I'm all aware of it.
You see, we believe that we live in this objective outside world, and we don't. We live in our internal world, we just don't realize it. There's a million and one things that are in your experience any moment. If they're not in your thinking, they don't exist for you.
I'm also thinking about having listening back to it on this.
Oh, okay, you're anticipating that already.
Yeah.
How annoying that's going to be.
Yeah. Well, I find it also to be people having a conversation and then two people are talking at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I find it very difficult, like especially on the radio or something. I think
yeah.
I have to turn it off then. Because having an intellectual or a political conversation,
yes.
I'm trying to think about what they're saying. But two of them at the same time, then they're sort of going.
That's it. Did you hear what he just said?
Right.
I'm trying to think about
yeah.
what they're saying.
Yeah.
That's what
trying
makes
listen,
it difficult.
And I got just turn that
yeah.
thing off. What are you going to miss? Revelation about politics? Don't think so.
Yeah.
Don't
you see, there's a difference between listening and trying to think about what you're listening to.
Mm.
They're two completely different things. And they generate two totally different experiences for you. And mostly what we do when we listen to something is we try to think about what we're listening to. And we quite rarely just listen. It's a different experience.
If we don't think about it, we're not absorbing it.
Sorry?
If you don't, sorry, it's the noise outside.
I know, that's why I can't hear.
If you're listening and you're not thinking about it,
yes.
you know, you wonder whether you're actually absorbing it.
Well, you'll be hearing it in a different way.
Yeah.
For sure. You might even be hearing it for the first time. Because I've noticed that sometimes I've got so much thought about what or who I'm listening to that I'm not even hearing it, really. What I'm listening to is my own thought process. Yeah. Yeah. And I only notice that when it stops. And when it stops suddenly, it's like, geez, I just caught what the person was really saying. I hadn't actually been paying attention before. I thought I was, but I wasn't.
That's how I kind of feel about a lot of homeopaths.
Yes.
At this point.
Well,
because
yeah, you could easily see that in a therapeutic setting. Is
yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
What you're saying about music and listening to music. I
yeah.
find when I'm enjoying music, I'm not just hearing it with my ears.
Yes.
It's like whole body is hearing.
That's it. You open yourself to it
yeah.
in a different way. Yeah.
So maybe that's the same. Listening to you.
It is. Yeah, that
and
potential
not
exists for any.
To understand, not intellectually, it's more like.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just let it in somehow. You let it touch you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the reason why we enjoy music or theatre or opera or movies, even these things, we like to be touched. Yeah? If it doesn't touch us, that's usually what, you know, the juice is in life is the things that touch us or move us in some way. So in order for that to happen, our own thinking has to move aside. Because we don't get touched by our own thinking to the same degree. What touches us is when we have that connection with something, we have that resonance, like you're saying. We allow ourselves to just resonate with whatever's around us. And it can be anything. It can be anything. Believe it or not. Could even be the tapping of a hammer. There's a certain music in that. The question is, can you hear it? If I've got an idea in my head that says, it shouldn't be happening, what are they thinking? Do they know how much I'm paying for this room? This is going to be on my recording. This is spoiling my whole workshop. I can't hear anything in that except my own noise now. You know? And of course I'm going to start getting upset by my own thoughts about it. And I'm going to attribute my upset to that noise.
It's just maybe, not just maybe, I'm choosing to concentrate on what you're saying.
Yes.
And so I'm aware of it, like any birds twittering or whatever.
Yeah, it becomes
that,
background noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because of certain situations at my flat,
yeah.
It's almost like, well, you've just that's the same as before and it's just a different thing now.
Yeah.
You live in central London, you're going to get bloody noise.
Probably. Probably.
You might be lucky one night, people won't be, you know.
And I tell you, she lives in Cairo. Central London is like a walk in the park. Compared to living in Cairo. This London is not noisy, is it? I mean, you must be loving the peace here. I mean.
Well, not,
don't live in Kerry.
You don't anymore, you got out.
No, it's a bit of a moment,
But when you go there, you remember why you left, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but I enjoy it, surprisingly.
That's the difference
I
for me as well.
Visiting the city now, I enjoy the noise.
Same
I
here, when coming to
noise.
London. Yeah, you have a different relationship.
I mean, Mumbai, who had to bring a cassette of the noise of the traffic and Mumbai so he could get to sleep at night.
Yeah. I had a friend who did the same. He used to come and stay with us in the country and he'd have to have the TV or something on in the background, otherwise he couldn't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. It shows you're alive, not just, doesn't it? I'm thinking somebody's going to get married and
that's it.
I'm a romantic. Not lovely, but...
Yeah.
That's what the noise is about.
Exactly. So you'll have a different feeling about it.
Yeah, that's how I'm trying to feel
about it. Okay.
Because I know it's annoying, but I'm thinking about it differently.
But is it really annoying?
No, when you started to talk about it, it got louder.
Of course. What we focus on increases in our experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was something on the radio about the music. You know, you were saying about this man was in ITU or something. It was in America, and his wife played in this music. See, he was unconscious, but when it was played to him afterwards, when he recovered, it released. He said he'd never cried like
mm-hmm.
that in his life,
mm-hmm.
And he realised it was a healing thing. So he now goes himself, patients, and plays the music or other music similar to that. And he says you can see on the monitors how it's beneficial.
Right. Definitely. But you know the old saying, was it one person's meat is another's poison? And that's just as true for music. You know, if you think about the musical phases you've gone through in your own life, there's probably music that you listen to at a different age and stage in life that you couldn't stand now, and you wonder how you ever loved it. And vice versa, you know, at that age, there'd be music that your parents' generation enjoyed that you'd like, you know, what is that nonsense? Switch it off. And it's a peculiar thing. There's no universal music that is healing for everybody or beneficial for everybody.
So it's part of his illusion that works.
Exactly.
Somebody else can play the same music to the same people and it have a different effect.
Exactly. Yeah. And some of the people hearing it could say, "Well, can you switch that off? It's really annoying." There's no guarantee they're going to receive it in the way he did.
Choose what music they want to be played during surgery and stuff.
Yeah, of course,
so
which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Mm. What about hypnosis? Is it that? So,
yeah.
This is the
What about it?
Does hypnosis, is it directed at thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, subconscious thoughts. So thoughts that we have repeatedly that we don't know we're having. That's essentially the domain of hypnosis. That's what it's working.
But how, I'm just curious how that goes, you know,
Well, it can make a big impact for someone. You know, if someone's got a heavy duty belief about something and under hypnotic suggestion they can see that differently or change their mind about it, that could play out and they have a whole different behaviour. It can help people break habits and addictions. You know, that's one of the successful areas for hypnosis. But again, it's limited to that particular area of life.
So you need to address every speech and every single...
That's the problem. You can end up having it forever.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll keep finding other things to work on, and when they run out of this life, they have to go into the past life and find some more things.
Yeah.
And how many of them have you got to work on? You know? So again, it's endless. It's not to say it's useless, but it is endless. And again, it's based on the false premise that we have to do something with the content of our thinking in order to change our experience of life. That's a false premise. It's not true. But it seems true. And if you act as if it's true, then you'll get evidence to support it, like anything. That's the peculiar thing about this, is that whatever we think, we end up feeling. We get the feelings that correspond to what we're thinking, And whenever we get the feelings that correspond to what we're thinking, that gives whatever we're feeling and thinking a sense of being reality. It seems like that's real to us. And it's very difficult for us to see that it couldn't be any other way than real. Until the moment we step out of it. So the moment we see it differently and we feel differently, then we look back and say, what was I thinking? How stupid was that? We can let go of it in an instant. But when we're in it, we're in it. And it seems absolutely real to us, whatever it is.
I've had that several times recently. I mean, since the last weekend, you know, blah, blah, blah. I've had so much hell to deal with.
Yeah.
I won't talk about it now, but I'm hoping to get some chance to talk about it. The reality. And what we talked about, and I've said it to several people about the... just thinking.
Yeah.
I didn't go, you're just thinking, I've turned it back to me, because obviously else they think I'm judging them. I'm not.
Funny for me.
This is the passive aggressive mode. But I turn it back to myself and say, well, I know that's just my thinking.
Yes.
But I can get myself into a fantastic state of rage or frustration or bitterness or whatever,
mm-hmm.
just by a certain situation,
yeah.
running it. But it doesn't take very long to run it.
No.
Just like that. It goes, yeah, and then he did and said that and whatever. Okay. But my body is reacting as if it's real.
Exactly.
And it's just going, yeah. Well, I have to think of a bunch of flowers. You know, went for a flotation tank thing. And lots of different distractions.
Yeah.
Because thoughts are so ingrained. Like we talk about the neural pathways.
Yeah.
All that crap. It's been a long time. You know.
It's been thunk many times.
Tedious.
I know. And it seems like what seems to us like the obvious natural thing to do is to try and think differently, you know? Let's generate some nice thought bubbles to replace the negative ones. And it's logical. So it's very, very tempting to go down that route. If we don't go down the route of trying to change the thoughts we're already having, the other route that's commonly gone down is we try and replace them with other more pleasant thoughts. So, well, okay, I'm just going to think about something else. I'm going to think about someone that makes me smile rather than someone that makes me angry. But that, again, is doomed, ultimately, as a strategy. The main reason it's doomed, essentially, is because you can't control your thinking for very long, in the same way as you can't control your breathing for very long.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of effort, yeah. It's a bit like breath control. In that sense, you can do it for a very small amount of time to a very limited degree, and then after a while you're gasping.
But then I'm curious what the realization does to that.
I know.
You see that,
that's the mystery of this, is that the realization itself actually changes the outcome by itself.
Effortlessly, without having to.
Yeah. What's interesting about that to me is that what that seems to suggest to me is that the more we just allow our connection to the intelligence to be what comes through us, rather than filling it with our own ideas of what should be happening, then that intelligence seems to operate in a way which is generally beneficial. So it defaults more that way. So that seems to be hardwired into the system. That's why we don't have to worry about it. It is self-correcting in that sense. And if you think about what's the prototype for that, again, look at the young child. You know, where do they spend most of their thought activity? Most of it's just in play and creativity and fun and messing around, and, you know? And every now and again they flip into being upset and it doesn't last long. And then they go back to having fun again. That's the prototype that we should be looking at. And they don't have to learn how to do that. They didn't get to that through years of therapy or techniques. That's what we naturally did as youngsters. And then the fact that we're not doing that has been learned. You see the difference? We've learned to go away from our default state. So it's not that we have to learn something to go back to it. It's an unlearning.
I just realized when you try to change the...
Yes. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. That's what most psychology does. Unwittingly, but it does. It gives you more reasons why you're screwed up.
So you remove yourself
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
When somebody comes along, I need to pull myself in them.
Yeah.
I'm creating more thoughts by adding positive thoughts.
Yeah.
When in fact I should really be just watching the thought and let it come and go.
And if you're working with someone else, what's more helpful really is just to help the person to understand the nature of thought rather than to add more thought. Yeah. It's a simple distinction, but it actually makes all the difference. Yeah. But it's very good that you've seen that. That even the attempt to be helpful, which is why we would do it in the first place, the effect of it is just to add more thought to the existing thought. So ultimately it can never really help them.
Do you think then that you know when we go through certain therapies where you're reliving a past, the way I see it is in a way you're making the bubble bigger.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's why I've always not really liked doing that.
Yeah, something in us knows that that's not right.
Okay.
And there's a good reason for that. Because it's not, and it's not necessary. It's not necessary. Sid Banks, he was asked a question around that by some psychologists, and he said it's a bit like this. And bear in mind, he wasn't a psychologist, but he was talking to psychologists. He said, imagine, if you've got a glass window looking out at a beautiful view, and he said, let's suppose that your life experiences and the negative traumas and thoughts and so on that you've had about life, they're represented by scratches on the glass. So he said, what's the effect of the scratches? You don't see so clearly. You know, your experience of the beauty of life is not as rich as it would be. So he says, what you're essentially doing as therapists, when you take someone back to their traumas, all you're doing, he says, is adding a few more scratches. He says, I know you mean well, but he said, that's all you're doing.
Charging a load of money.
And he would say this with a big smile on his face to these, you know, psychologists who've been doing it for 25 years. Like, oh my God. But he wasn't being judgmental, he was just being very matter-of-fact. He's just saying, I'm sorry, but that's all you're doing. Whenever you take someone back to their past and you get them to talk about the things that have been hurting them, so they get to relive those feelings over and over, he said, you're just adding a few more scratches to the existing ones. That's all.
Well, you're actually getting the feelings out so they can maybe be experienced if they want to experience them.
Well, that can happen, but if it does, then it could be, that would be a one-off thing, you know. Like, and that's the example I gave earlier. If someone's been avoiding feeling something because they had a judgment about it, part of their healing process might be just to feel it once and let it go. But that's it.
Yeah.
But in a lot of therapy settings, that's not what happens. The person is taken back over and over, like raking over the coals over and over again. And tell me more about that. And then what happened then, and, you know? And then what happened in the next relationship? Oh, it was a variation on a theme. Surprise, surprise. Tell me about that one. And essentially what that's doing is giving the person the re-traumatizing, really. They're re-experiencing over and over again the painful feelings that they had the first time.
It's amplifying it.
Yeah, I found it very unpleasant. And that's why I decided I'm not going to go back to
it. Well, that's been something that niggled with me when I was doing the emotional release work. I was constantly walking that line between, is this beneficial because they're letting go of something which needed to be let go of, or is it actually re-traumatizing because they're having to feel it over and over again? And I wasn't always sure which it was, you know, and that disturbed me. Because it gets blurry. If you don't understand how it works, it's very easy to fall into the trap of going over things unnecessarily.
The reason I was able to make that choice was because the way I felt for days and weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, this can't be right if this is the way
exactly.
making me feel.
That's great that you noticed that, because that is the consistently reliable guide. Is that how you feel? That's it. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
If you don't agree with them, tell them this is making me feel worse. They tell you're in denial.
You're in denial, exactly.
And you feel even worse because you can't, you're denying you.
Yeah.
And denial.
I know, and that's a
come back next week.
You know, that's a very unfortunate mistake that's been made in psychology. Is that, you know, a person who actually gets clear that this isn't helpful, somehow they're accused of being in denial or pretending something that's not true, when actually it's the opposite. They're realizing something for themselves, which is deeply true.
Very good tricksters, the people who invented this psychology.
Yeah, but you know, they were trying to help people, and they still are. It's you know, they didn't set out to deceive. But the problem is, if we build a practice on a basic misunderstanding, everything we add to it is just more misunderstanding. But we don't know that at the time. And there's been a thousand examples of this historically. You know, we used to, if people were sick not that long ago, we used to cut holes in their body and let the blood out, or put leeches on them to drain the blood out, because we had good reasons. And they weren't doing it just to traumatize people. They really thought, you know, it's because of the congestion of the blood, that's why the person's ill. So the remedy is obviously to take the blood away. It was well-meaning. A little while after that, it was believed that a lot of diseases were caused by bad smells.
Really?
Yeah, really. That was the popular held belief. In the UK, it's still recorded that, you know, the song "Ring a Ring of Roses, a Pocket Full of Posies." Posies is a bunch of flowers. People would go around with bunches of flowers to protect themselves against disease. Why? Good smell repels the bad smells.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It made sense at the time.
That was the plague, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they had a ring of spots around
them. That's it.
So that was the ring of roses.
And you know, it's even the reason why they started to widen the streets originally.
Mm.
They widened the streets because it would help the smells to dissipate. So that would therefore prevent the spread of disease. And you know what? It worked. Because they widened the streets, you know, the sewage kind of washed away a bit more quickly, so the incidence of disease would drop a little bit. As they see, we told you it was because of those bad smells. Right? Do you see how easily we can get caught in our own misunderstanding, and then we just compound it. We compound the error. Exactly. You don't have to look far in modern medicine, and you'll see that all of these procedures, they're based on a fundamental misunderstanding of health and disease. But the intention is still good. They want to help people, but they've built it on a false foundation. So anything you do on top of that, sooner or later, it's going to be shown to be unhelpful. And unfortunately, in the psychological field, that's what's happened here. There's been a misunderstanding about the nature of thought and about the nature of our feelings, where they're coming from. We've all fallen for it. It's very easy to fall for it, as you can well see. But once you fall for that, anything that you do to try and alleviate it is going to be more of the problem. You're going to add more to the problem. It's not going to relieve it at all. So we've got to keep going back upstream. And that's my job. My job is to keep pointing you to the point of origin as much as I can, until you start to see that very, very clearly for yourself. More and more clearly. And then when that happens, you'll get less concerned with the contents downstream. So your orientation will start to shift around. You'll start to see the nature of it rather than get bothered by the content of it. And the more you see that, the role of thought in your life, then the less of a hold it will have on you.
I've actually, it's something very recent, the past 2 months. And obviously this happened, so I've noticed it before, but I do notice myself thinking something, doing nothing about it, or not intentionally trying to change anything, and it will go in the same direction that I was thinking. And there are several. One of them was with my pregnancy, actually. My sister-in-law was pregnant with triplets. I didn't know I was pregnant with twins, so I opened up and I started reading about multiple babies, and then the next time I went to twins. I don't know if that's relevant, but it was weird. I remember it very, you know, something similar happened in the past 2 months. And I see it sometimes when I'm really thinking something, and then it just happens, and it's not my, I didn't do nothing, it's just a thought.
It just comes to you, yeah.
I think what's challenging for me about this, or where I am now, is, you know, okay, here it is, it's happening. But this feeling that I can't necessarily do anything about it. Like,
I know.
That this is the...
I know. Yeah.
This is where I get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You won't be the only one, I can assure you. It goes against the grain for us to just have that be just how it is. I mean, what for me is even more disturbing is when you start to realise that what I call my thoughts... You know, I say, this is my thought. I had this thought. Well, did I really? It seems to me now, when I look at it now, it's like thought just happens.
Mm.
It just happens. It's not nearly as personal as I think it is.
You still have
a
thought.
Hmm?
It's still your thought because you had it.
Well, I took ownership of it afterwards, but
it happened. Where physically, wherever it was, but I mean, it happened. But if it's in your,
yeah,
it's your thoughts.
Well, we can say so. I mean, I was the one who experienced it, let's say. Yeah, but it's a subtle thing I'm talking about. It's just something I've noticed is that my claim to be the owner or the originator is getting a bit flimsy.
It wasn't original. It was just a well-used one.
But someone else can have the thoughts as well. It's still, you're still having your thoughts.
Okay.
It's almost kind of the same thought. No. Not,
well, possibly.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It just became something that's a bit fuzzy for me now, whereas I used to be pretty sure that was my thought. You know, you've got yours, I've got mine. These are mine. I'm having these, okay? And I started to realize, well, they're having me, actually. You know, it's just as much that way around. They're having me. And I'm just dancing to their tune, or not.
In quantum physics, if the field is full of just light information,
yes,
a thought is you just tuning into the consciousness,
yeah,
into that information.
Yeah.
So it is possible for lots of people to have the same thought, exactly the same.
We're just tapping into it somehow. Yeah. We're just picking it up. Yeah.
So whether you claim it as yours or not, it's sort of,
it's kind of arbitrary again.
This is where artists become very upset.
I know. This is definitely mine, and it's original, and I suffered to get it. You're not going to take it away from me.
People can have, you know, when they're discovering things.
Yeah.
You can have people on different continents discovering the same thing at the same time.
More or less at the same time. Yeah, this is quite common, isn't it? And this I think is consistent with the notion that there is this universal thought field, this higher intelligence.
Yeah.
To which we're all a part, and it seems to me like, yeah, thoughts of that level, where it's a genuine insight that's coming into human understanding. Various people wake up to it more or less simultaneously, it seems.
Can I just ask where you think these sort of bad thoughts come from?
Like, we just make them up, it seems to me. We can think anything.
It's a bit like the light and dark, isn't it?
Yeah, we can think anything.
You wouldn't know what a good thought was if you didn't know what a bad thought was.
That's the ultimate free will, really. Free will is that we're free to think whatever we like.
But you know, if something happens to you, like, say, at some point in my life, I've had quite a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
I can't say I chose. Did I choose?
Of course not. Who would in their right mind?
It's like when you were saying about the thoughts coming to you.
Yeah.
It happened at one time in my life, and I can remember exactly when it started. And I can remember when it went.
Yeah.
And a homeopath actually said to me, "Oh, do you think you're possessed?" And I thought,
"No." That's helpful. I didn't until you mentioned it.
I think about that now. I thought, "Why did she say that?"
Yeah, you could treat yourself out with that if you like.
Yeah,
but I think it's, you know, like ghosts, because I'm always being frightened of ghosts.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, anyway. But, you know, I was young then, and I don't think I chose to feel like that. Why did I feel like that?
Well, a lot of our thought is conditioned. And what I mean by that is that it's learned. You know, we've observed the significant people around us when we're in our formulative years, and we've seen how they think and how they behave, and we align our thinking with theirs. Or, if we don't like the look of it, we go the opposite direction to how they think. Either way, it's been conditioned, you know. So you get either we fall into line with the kind of family thinking and the societal thinking, or we rebel against it. But it's running our life either way.
I just think, you know, when I was saying about the daughter before, that she's going off to South America. Well, yeah. My mother, her take on it is,
I hope nothing happens. Yeah.
And mine is, she's going to have the time of her life.
There you go. That's exactly the example I'm giving. So you can either become the worrier,
yes,
or you've got the opposite and say, well, it'll be fine, you know, it's a good choice. But
I'm just not choosing to think that.
Yeah, but that conditioning's still there. So conditioned thought is just something that we've kind of absorbed by being around it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't even be aware that we're thinking that way ourselves.
And it's a generational thing as well.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah. And sometimes multi-generational, you know, you see it's gone on for a number of generations, not just the one that preceded us. But you can see that, and if you know, I've worked with families where you can see very clearly the correlation between what the parents' thinking, mode of thinking is, and how the children pan out. You know, it's very distinct, it's very obvious to an outsider. You know, you can see it, they can't see it. It's quite shocking to them when you point it out.
Really?
Yes.
And it's a real shock to a lot of people to believe, well, actually, I'm the one creating my reality.
That's it. I'm generating this within myself.
And exactly as you said, Jane, well, I don't remember choosing to be like that.
Who would?
There's that thing that I didn't choose it, so how can my thoughts be creating my reality?
That's
that conflict?
Yeah.
Because you think, well, I wouldn't choose that, never. I would never choose my life to be like this.
That's it.
Mm. But it's that responsibility that actually, you know, it is to do with me.
Mm-hmm. And you're not choosing them.
And you're not choosing them.
They're both are true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm generating all my life experience through my own thinking, and I'm not choosing my thinking. It's just happening.
And
both of those are true.
Like, you know, the ground moving underneath your feet. What to do? But then I think that's where trust and faith is, that you just have to deal with that and come, you know,
well,
come to some conclusion.
That is the nature of it, isn't it? It's just seeing that that's actually the nature of how we're put together. Is that we're beings that breathe and digest and think, and just as that we're not responsible for our breathing or our heart rate, in that sense we're not responsible for our thinking either. It just happens.
Then what is the purpose of life?
Well, whatever you decide.
But that, the thoughts are not mine. That's
exactly.
So.
Well, there's another way you can look at it. Even though we can say none of these thoughts are mine in the sense that I would choose them, you know, they just happen, some of them feel better than others.
Mm-hmm.
That's a given. That's a truth that everybody can recognize, is that when you're thinking a certain way and feeling a certain way, it feels better than when you're thinking that way and feeling that way. There's no one in this room who could deny that from their own experience. Right? So given that's the case, if you get interested in, well, what's the purpose, what's the meaning, you know, what's my destiny,
yeah,
that kind of thing, well, to me the most reliable guide is what feels good to you, what feels right to you, what feels nurturing to you, what feels inspiring to you. If you follow that, whatever your destiny is, whatever your purpose is, will unfold right in front of your eyes. Yeah.
That other people do.
Yeah.
But I think it's to do with the way you've been brought up. Because I don't know with other people, but, you know, in the Asian communities, if they're, you know, you from very young age, you're not supposed to feel this, you're not feel that. So you're intellectually, you forget what it feels like to have a gut feeling.
Well, maybe, but you haven't met my parents.
So, you know, maybe it's just. Some people are more intuitive, and you know, I think when you suppress something for a long time, you can't remember how it felt.
Well,
otherwise.
Yeah, but it's not lost, you know. Nobody loses it. What we call intuition, to me, it's on the same scale as realization, insight. You're just tapping that bigger field because your own personal thinking is not in the way anymore. So it's an always-on system. That's the thing I realized from this, is that the potential for insight, intuition, inspiration, realization, it's always on. None of us are ever denied access to that. It's just that we deny ourselves unwittingly because we put our own thoughts on top of it. But it's 24/7. We're hardwired for inspiration and intuition. It's completely built in. And there's no one that's exceptional to that, as far as I can tell. That's good news. But the idea that we have to go on courses to develop our intuition, this is nonsensical. It's like trying to develop your breathing or develop your digesting or something, you know. It's built in. It's built into the system. I'm going to learn how to reproduce my cells. No, you're not. So, you already know how to do that. Well, this is in the same category. We already know how to do inspiration, realization, everything. We're hardwired for it. But what we may have learned is to put our faith in something else, which is not helpful. And you're right about that. Certain family conditioning, certain societal conditioning is heavier than others, which means it has more of an obscuring effect. You know, it just puts more scratches on the glass. That's all. Well, it might be. For me, when I left home, which was secure, uncomfortable, and known, I felt great because I was really happy to be somewhere else on my own, which was actually very insecure and very unknown, but I loved it.
So, how does one distinguish between going over that transformation phase where you interview something new, uncomfortable? And, you know, maybe scary even, but
well,
at the same time...
This is very clear now. You can understand this very easily. What's the only reason why any life circumstance is going to be uncomfortable for you? What's the only reason? Because if you're thinking about it in that moment. That's the only reason. There's nothing else that can make it uncomfortable for you apart from your thoughts about it in the moment. So it doesn't matter what your circumstances are in that sense.
You talked about the plane going to crash or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. If the plane's going down, you would imagine, you know, most of us would fantasize, God, if I was in a plane going down, I'd be freaking out like everybody else. But actually, the people that have been in planes that have gone down, they say, well, some freaked out, some didn't, some became unbelievably calm. Some started praying to Jesus, who a moment ago were atheists.
Or if you don't know that.
There's a,
so say, going down with the end.
If you don't even know that it's happening, say, maybe you fall asleep or you think it's just going to a different altitude for some unknown reason, you're totally fine, you're not freaked out at all. There's a whole spectrum of responses to it, all based on the thinking interpretation that you're putting on it at the moment. And no one can predict ahead of time what your response will be. You can't even predict. You can't even predict what you're thinking will be in 5 minutes, never mind when you're in a plane that's going down. Can't.
When you feel something, say physically, pain,
yes,
that's generated from some thought, but how do you access what that thought is? Does it dissipate that pain?
Well, I don't know that pain, physical pain, is necessarily...
Or discomfort in a situation which then leads to a habitual activity of some sort that is addictive or whatever.
Well, you're asking me, how do you access that thought? What you're saying is, which bubbles do I need to pop? How do I find that bubble in this mass of bubbles? And what I'm telling you is, go back to the bubble making machine. Don't worry about
turn it off, you mean.
Don't worry about the individual bubble.
Get off. Get off.
No, you can't turn it
off. Turn off the source.
Why would you want to turn it off? It's like breathing. It's natural to you to think.
But I'm just thinking for you've done something for so long. Somehow seems,
yeah, of course,
an impossibility.
It seems that way, doesn't it? I thought this way 1,000 times, therefore I have to keep thinking it again. Well, do you really? If each bubble...
I'm just thinking of a time I can't access the thought.
If each bubble's got a lifespan of, what did we say?
A second
or a few moments. You see, we're giving something that is very transient, we're giving it a permanence that it doesn't actually have. And when we do that, when we give some a transient thought a permanence, when we turn it into something that's fixed and lasting, then we have to start doing things with it to make it go away and to make it less and have less of an impact. And actually, it's just passing through. It's already gone. The one that you were thinking about when you asked the question, it's already gone.
No, but the feeling I have in my here, physically there, at the moment, because I'm talking about it,
yeah.
I don't know where that comes from.
Of course. We don't know where most of our feelings come from because we're not aware of most of the bubble thoughts that we're generating. That's the nature of it.
Okay. This is where, for me, it becomes a bit fuzzy, what's feeling and what's intuition. You see what I mean? Because if thoughts produce feeling, intuition taps into something, it's mind. Bigger.
Yeah, it's a different level of thought. It's still thought, but it's a different order of thinking. And it has a different feeling tone to it.
But it's this distinction, it's knowing what's what.
You know.
Yeah.
You know. I know that you know. You might not know that.
Yeah.
But I know that you know.
Okay.
And I'm sure that you've had experience in your life where you've known, for sure.
I'm here.
An example?
They don't necessarily feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
But
it felt right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And what I've generally found is when I follow the one that feels right, it works out. Even if my thinking mind has got a lot to say about it, which it usually does. You know? A lot of people probably looked at this and had the feeling, yeah, that's right. And then what happened is their mind got busy and that's why they're not here. Mm-hmm. They talked themselves out of it. Sorry? Literally, yeah. It's the same thing, but that's essentially what they do. Yeah. And we do that a lot in life.
And what if the intuition is strong enough, you still get through all the thoughts?
Sorry?
People who are here as well have thoughts that kind of...
Exactly.
The intuition is powerful enough.
Exactly. So even though some of you would say, I don't know the difference, I don't know if I trust it, actually you did already. You are doing it already. And there's many other examples where you did that too. It's just that we don't credit ourselves. And having recognised it, having followed it. Yeah. I would say it is what got you here. Because there's no good reason to come in. It doesn't make any sense, does it? What's he talking about? 9 months talking about nonsense?
It's quite hard to, you know, just say what's it about, what you're doing.
I know. It's, well, it's going to be even harder after the weekend, I tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you try explaining this when you get home.
Yeah, I'll just say, I'm going to be happy.
That's good.
But, and then they say, how much does that cost?
Yeah. That's the cost of a holiday.
There you go. Exactly. Couple of grand.
Lifetime of booze in that case.
Yeah. There you go. It's relatively cheap.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a lunch break. It's coming up to 1:15. So we're going to break till 2:30. So it's 1:15. Is that good?
Yeah.
I find that especially if you're going out to the park, it takes a little bit to get there and get ordered and stuff and then come back. So an hour was a bit of a squeeze. We tried it and it was a squeeze. So if we can be back by 2:30, we'll have plenty of time. What was I going to say? No, that's all. Have a good lunch. As I say, you can get lunch in the refectory if you want, but if you want to go out, it's a nice day, I recommend it. Oh, they took it away, though. We missed the event.
Was it the Freeze Art Fair or something?
I think it was your swearing that did it.
Yeah, I put the vibe on. No, I felt better after I had a cuss.